Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport on day four, Thursday of Wimbledon 2017. We have already had 4 days of this thing. This is our fourth daily tennis podcast from Wimbledon. There are still 10 more to come after this.
Yeah, I'm enjoying every one of them.
I am too. We're not over the hump yet though, David. Thursday is often a weird day at events, isn't it? It's the day that you sort of think you're over the hump.
Well, it's the first time that we've recorded with the light really fading. I mean, it's 9:30 in the evening here, isn't it? And I mean, it feels like we're in the darkness.
It does. I've just come off court number two, where I was watching Caroline Wozniacki and Svetlana Peronkova. Really great match, actually. And Wozniacki broke to win it in two straight sets, but there was absolutely no way they were playing a third set if Svetlana Peronkova had won that second set and taken it to a decider. No way. It was very borderline. It was only because they were at the end of a set that they carried on playing. I think the same applies to Jack Sock, who has just been called into press after losing in five sets to, I have to say, a guy whose first name I don't know, Offner, his name is. He's from Austria. He is the guy that beat Jay Clark, the Brit, the young Brit,
in
five sets,
from two sets
to love down in the final round.
Sebastian or Stefan?
I think it's Sebastian. Well done.
There we go.
Sebastian Offner of Austria, who, after coming from two sets to love down in the final round of qualies, is now into round three of Wimbledon, having beaten Jack Sock. Now, I don't know how much of the foot injury that we saw Jack Sock sustain at Queen's came into play there, but I know he came from two sets to love down to take it to a fifth, Jack Sock, so he can't have been struggling physically that much, I would have thought. So, well done, Sebastian Offner.
Yeah, we better find out about him. He's a new one for us to discover, but that's the beauty of slams. People just pop up, don't they, and become relevant somehow.
Tell you someone else who's popped up and become relevant today. Magdalena Rybarikova of Slovakia, who knocked out, I can't believe I'm bringing this up so early, she knocked out my pick for the title, Karolina Pliskova. Now, I was never a particularly confident pick for the title. I'm not sure such a thing exists.
You seemed pretty smug about it 24 hours ago, Catherine Whittaker.
Yeah, I did
Whittaker,
a bit. Yeah, I feel
when
silly.
You were giving your... I would say it is a shock, but it's not that much of a shock. I mean, you and I were discussing this, weren't we, when that match was going on, as to how big a shock it is that Karolina Pliskova is losing this match, or if she lost it, how big an upset might it be? And I felt as though it's not that big an upset because she's got form. Karolina Pliskova has failed to deliver at the slams more often than not, really.
Agreed, but then what would be a massive upset in this women's draw? I don't think there is one. There are upsets. A seed losing is an upset. Kerber losing is on paper an upset. She didn't today. Incidentally, she won through in two sets against Kirsten Flipkins, and I was reasonably impressed with her. Wozniacki losing might be a bit of an upset. Radvanska losing, former finalist, as she almost did today in one of the most woeful tennis matches I've ever seen against Christina McHale. That kind of would be an upset. But I don't think there are any massive upsets in this draw.
That's an interesting point. I think I'm struggling to think of anything.
Muguruza
that would,
losing, upset, yeah. But not, you know,
no,
it's not
right.
Stop the presses.
You're right. There is no clear favourite, really.
Well, the bookies think there is, and they think it's Jo Konta, and they're wrong.
Why?
She doesn't... You just said it, David. No, you just said there's no clear favourite. How much of a favourite is she? As a clear favourite.
How much of a favourite?
I can't do numbers with betting.
Okay. Well,
but she is a clear bookie's favourite, and
truth
that is not right. I get that there has to be a favourite, and maybe she is a marginal favourite, but to say there's a clear favourite in this draw is ludicrous.
Well,
it's ludicrous.
I think I tend to agree with you that it's a little ludicrous, given that it is a pretty level playing field. Often I feel that the bookies in that situation are going to do it for the headlines.
And also, they're not neutral arbiters of the sport, are they? Odds aren't just determined by likelihood to win tennis matches, they're determined by supply and demand of betting. So there are two factors going on, and in the UK, people are more likely to want to bet on British athletes, so
yes,
the odds tend to be shorter for British athletes. You're stupid to place a bet on Andy Murray during Wimbledon, regardless of what the odds are, because you're not really going to get market value.
You're not going to get value.
So there is that at play, and to speak about odds as if they are some kind of neutral arbitration.
If I were to look at the field right now, I do feel as though Konta, on paper, has as good a chance as anybody.
Oh, I completely agree. I'm not questioning Konta's chances. On paper, I don't see anybody that has a bigger chance than her. I just think clear favourite, ludicrous.
Aren't they one and the same thing to some degree? If you can't see anybody that's more likely on paper to win the title than her, then she's the favourite.
Clear favourite.
Okay, so just the one word.
I think she is... I would put her level pegging with a couple of other people.
Okay.
As favourites. Clear favourite, no way.
Okay. Yeah, I
hope she's not. I hope she's able to avoid the inevitable headlines that there are going to be. It's Konta's to lose. That's what they're all going to say.
It's just part of being a top tennis player. She's a top five player in the world. That's the way
it
is.
But she's never had to cope with it before, and it's a blooming tough thing to have to cope with.
Yeah. So let's see if she can. Good luck to her.
You're very combative tonight, David.
No, I'm not. I don't see that her being the favourite is a problem. I mean, it's part of the game. If she's going to be and fulfil the potential that she has and achieve what she wants
to
achieve, Andy Murray's had it for years.
Coping with the ups and downs of the sometimes and often ludicrous British press during this tournament is not a very challenging thing to have to deal with. You're just saying, it's par for the course, everyone's the same, everyone has to deal with it.
Look,
come on, it's a big thing.
Certainly Tim Henman back in the day had to put up with the headline that we've talked about many times before, that when Andre Agassi and Pete Sampras went tumbling out of the draw, suddenly it was, if you don't win it this year, Tim, we'll never forgive you. Now, I agree that headlines like that are... It's tough. I mean, he used to laugh at it. Andy Murray's been putting up with it for years, but... Johanna Konta knows what she's in here. She's in Britain. It's Wimbledon. She's just got to crack on with it.
2 days ago, she does have to crack on with it, and I've no doubt she will. But 2 days ago, we were talking about that match against Donna Vekic being the match that properly brings her to the attention of the British people. She's blooming well going to be brought to the attention of the British people with headlines along the lines of "It's yours to lose now, Joe."
Well, I don't know whether we're going to get that headline.
I feel like it's going to be an enormous shift from Joe Konta as an under-talked-about sixth seed at a home slam to now being probably an over-talked-about sixth seed at a home slam. It's a big shift, is all I'm saying.
I'm not convinced. We'll find out. Maybe we might get joined by Simon Briggs in a little while.
You don't think any tabloids are going to go over the top about this, David?
Possibly, but that's just the landscape. I don't have a huge problem with it.
It is the landscape. It's a challenging one. And something she hasn't had to deal with particularly before. Because as we've discussed, because she's never had success at this tournament, has flown under the radar more than she should in terms of the British consciousness.
Yes, I agree with you that she has.
Right, we've got to the I agree with you, so we're going to move on.
Right,
I've got to where I wanted to get to.
Good. Excellent. Right, what's happened today?
What else have we got from today? So I think I've covered most of the significant women's results. Wozniacki won, Radvanska won, Kerber won, Rybarikova won. Who else is in that section of the draw? Vandeweghe won very easily earlier on today. She is a huge danger in that top half
for
me.
I know. because she's going to be in the final, according to my predictions. But we'll see.
Revised predictions. Whether should we call them revised predictions?
No.
Was she always in the
she's
final?
She's always been in the final.
Right, okay.
But I did feel she would be playing Petra Kvitova.
Well,
and
I had tournament favourite Jo Konta in my final, so I'm sitting pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's interesting because she's the clear favourite. No. I mean, the one thing I would say before we talk too much about the press, we are part of the press, effectively. We are the media, certainly on BBC Radio 5 Live, for who you and I work. We will be hyping up Jo Konta. There is not a question about it. It is a big deal. She is left in the draw. She's a decently high seed. She's just had a big win. Yeah, momentum will build. We will hype it up to high heaven. That is just the nature of the beast.
We'll and hype it, but I won't be saying anywhere on 5 Live that she's the clear favourite for this title, which is what I've seen in some
Well,
quarters.
Look, I don't think she is the clear favourite for the title. But,
so we're agreeing. Know,
yeah, we are.
Should we talk about the men
so
and try and agree
more? 10 minutes of wasted energy, wasn't it? Hope you enjoyed that here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with the Telegraph and Eurosport.
Should we talk about the blokes?
Yeah, blokes, yeah.
Well, Roger Federer won very easily against an opponent who lots of people had underestimated, perhaps going into it, including me. Didn't get eaten for breakfast. Someone suggested eaten for brunch, which is an assessment that I like. He was allowed to enjoy his breakfast and then got eaten for brunch.
Who's this? Federer's opponent?
Yeah, Dusan
Ljajic. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah.
He won the first 7 points of the match. And it occurred to me where I'd seen him before, just in the morning. I mean, it wasn't really in the notes because it's not that relevant necessarily to this particular event. But we saw him doing the Davis Cup tie against Great Britain in Serbia. He beat James Ward on clay and then he ended up losing out to Kyle Edmund a year ago. And I remember thinking at the time, what a lovely backhand this guy's got. Single-handed backhand. And I
great seeing two single-handed.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Court,
and I was sitting next to in commentary box on BBC Radio 5 Live with Mr. Boris Becker for the first time. I'd never had opportunity in the past to commentate with Boris. Terrible name drop, I know. But anyway, I've done it now.
Picked it up off the floor.
There we are. Can I have that back now? he was very interesting to talk to about that match in terms of watching a guy hit these firm, beefy ground strokes, and it almost felt Becker-like, the way Ljajic was going about his business. But Federer then got into the tiebreak and just shifted gear, and he won it 7-love, the tiebreak in that first set. Thereafter, I mean, Federer was in total command. It was still a good match, though. I mean, I really enjoyed watching Ljajic play today. He did not get breakfasted.
He did not get breakfasted, and I agree with you. It was a very enjoyable match, and Federer, I think, will enjoy having been challenged a bit and having had to move through the gears just a little, because obviously he barely even got a match in the first round. Dolgopolov retiring. Novak Djokovic ate Pavlicek for breakfast, didn't he?
Yeah, well, that was, yeah. He had that one with ketchup. I mean, it was lovely.
Now, what did we make of his performance there?
I didn't see the match. I was doing the Del Potro match against Ernest Gorbis, which was a pretty big upset, actually. Gorbis was fantastic.
Straight sets.
And he will now face Djokovic.
He was very, very bullish about his chances, Gorbis. I saw it on paper and I thought, good match, Delpo should win, because I'd watched his first match against Kokkinakis and I was impressed. But then I saw the quotes from Ernest Gorbis yesterday and I saw how firmly he believed he was going to win, and this was suddenly an Ernest Gorbis who cared about tennis again, and he's made some technical adjustments, I think, to his game that you were talking about. He's no longer got that big take back on the forehand.
It's interesting because, I mean, I don't feel that comfortable talking about technical adjustments simply because I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not a player, I'm not a coach, but with the naked eye,
I can confirm that.
With a naked eye, I was watching, and I've seen him play for many, many years, and, you know, he has had this more and more pronounced windmill straight-armed forehand over the years that has frankly looked ever so uncomfortable. And on a grass court, you're thinking, it's so unwieldy. How could he ever react quickly enough if he's pushed and rushed and so forth? Well, today, that had gone. He's made it a much more compact stroke. I'm not sure. I can't remember whether it's because of injury that he's needed to do that or whether it's, you know, because the technique wasn't producing the results. But he's had terrible injury problems the last 2 years as Ernest Gorbis.
And regardless of what it is, he deserves great credit, because I've been speaking to Naomi Cavaday a lot, who's on the 5 Live team and does a lot of work with juniors, and she was talking about as bizarre as it is, how reluctant so many players are to make changes and how frustrating that is for coaches, especially ones that have had some success. You know, Golbis has been in a French Open semi-final. He's beaten Federer there. He's had great success. He's been inside the world's top 10. A lot of players will tell you to jog on, she says, yeah. If you get them,
yes.
If you say you need
very
to make
rare.
Some technical changes. So good on him.
Oh, I mean, it was Ivan Lendl, wasn't it, who said about Andy Murray, look, I don't teach technique. I suck at it. I'm terrible at it. So, you know, I guess somebody else does that. And frankly, at this level, you know, you should have your stuff sorted out. And really,
but a lot of them don't. You know, I was watching Christina McHale earlier, and a bit like you, you know, I usually wouldn't venture into the technical side of things, but it's so clear the technical issues with her game. And, great job she's doing to make what she has out of her career with those technical issues. But, and Naomi was describing it to me in detail, and it was so, so blatant, the technical issues. So there, you might think, how can anyone, given how many thousands and millions of tennis players in the world, how can any rise to the top that don't, and how many other marginal gains there are that make the difference? You'd think the technique, there'd just be no room for any error in technique, and actually, there's a fair bit. Maybe not in the top five, but elsewhere, there certainly is.
I do agree with you. I think that took some guts from Golbis to sort that out. And today, I mean, I've been watching him for years, and occasionally he's wonderful to watch, and he's fun to watch, and he's explosive. Well, today he was a proper tennis player. I mean, the movement was there. He was explosive off the ground. He looked, you know, sometimes I think with him, he looks a bit lethargic, as though he could take it or leave it. He's not that bothered. He was dialed in from moment one today.
And he's got a beard.
He's got the most sensational beard. I mean, did you see that photo that I put up?
Of course I did, David.
Oh, I'm so proud of that. The castaway moment from Tom Hanks with the big bushy beard, and that was Ernest Golbis today. Wonderful.
It's a little bit more groomed, isn't it?
No, that's not groomed.
I think it's a bit more...
I just can't be bothered.
No.
I mean,
I think he'd be delighted with you saying that, but I think he has been a bit bothered about his
beard. I'm not sure. Tennis players do love the sort of, I can't be bothered, 3-day stubble, don't they? Well, this was a 3-year stubble. This was a sort of, you know, I actually keep pets and things for later in that beard. It's so bushy. You know,
like the twits.
Yeah, exactly. Like the story. That's a little story, isn't it?
It's a Roald Dahl book,
yeah.
The twits.
Roald Dahl's story, the twits. Yeah,
love
I mean,
the
he quite clearly...
He looked like a twit.
He stores snacks.
That's something
there.
To put to him.
Yeah.
After he... Question: beats Djokovic in round three.
Well, I mean, I was looking at the record.
Challenges Djokovic in round three.
I think the record is 6-1 in the favour of Novak Djokovic, and you know, I think Djokovic's compact game would always cause a guy like Golbis problems.
Agreed.
In that way. And I still, you know, I would still expect him to beat Golbis. But if Golbis played like he did today, he made Del Potro look really ponderous today, and which is sad to say, it was the case. And the only wobble Golbis had was at the end of the third set. He was a breakup and he got broken back. It's the only time he was broken in the whole match, but he was explosive, he was thoughtful, you could see what he was trying to do. If he played like that, he can push Djokovic. He could beat Djokovic if Djokovic is not on it. That's what I would say.
I agree. I expect Djokovic to come through. I expect it to be a good match, maybe four sets, but he has it in him to beat him. Maybe one in 10 times. If he played that match on 10 consecutive days, he'd win one of them if Djokovic is having a good day, two or three of them if it's an irritated, frustrated Djokovic.
Well,
and there were signs that despite... I remember this from Rome and from Madrid with Djokovic. He was playing really well, and yet he still looked irritated. He still had that slightly crazed look in his eye. So it's not necessarily about the play. I was impressed with how he played today. I remember that. I think it was the Bedene match in Rome, in his first match in Rome. I felt like saying, "You're playing really well, mate. Don't worry about it.
Well,
chill out."
It's very interesting hearing Becca on this subject as to what happened, you know, and he just said he took his foot off the pedal a bit. He couldn't keep
that up.
And
does he think his foot's back on the pedal now?
He said he feels he looks in a much better place now. He feels he's got the right sort of coaching team around him. You know, he was nothing but respectful for Novak Djokovic.
Yeah.
Clearly, there's a lot of... I do feel there's a lot of affection still
there
for what they achieved together
without
as a team.
Question.
Huge respect. And, you know... it's one of those things we're only going to find out in the course of time whether he can ever rediscover that sort of form. But I mean, look, how long did we talk about Nadal and Federer being short of that level of form, and look at them now. Look at them.
Yeah, exactly. No, I've learnt my lesson about writing anyone off.
Well,
I think we
here.
All have.
It's
I think
not,
everyone in tennis has learnt their lesson about writing people off.
We all looked complete fools, and I'm quite happy to hold my hand up to that as well.
Just a couple of other results to mop up before we discuss tomorrow's order of play. Milos Raonic did win through in four sets against Mikhail Yuzhny. He didn't look impressive at all. The serve was working. Not much else was working for him. He's relying on the serve. He doesn't look comfortable.
I didn't even know the results of that one. And I saw that Yuzhny won the first set, and I saw them march out onto the court. I was coming back from that Del Potro-Gorbis match, and I saw Raonic and Yuzhny walking past, and Yuzhny had beaten Mahu in the first round, and he sort of, he had a really sort of positive look about him as he was walking towards the court, and he won that first set.
Nothing to lose, eh?
Yeah.
Nothing to lose. Whereas Milos Raonic looks very furrowed brow and stressed to
Doesn't
me.
Doesn't look I know the same as a very, year ago.
I know he's an intense guy, but there was something that John McEnroe brought out in him a year ago, and I really like the addition of Mark Knowles to the coaching team. I think in principle that could be really good, but there's definitely something up with Milos Raonic, whether it's him having lost trust in his body. I know physical issues have been a big feature of Raonic's career over the last year and more, so it could be that, I don't know, but he's definitely not looking like a guy that's going to repeat his run to the final from last year.
No, not at the moment. I mean, something's going to have to change. He hasn't got that level of form, self-confidence about him. I think he, unless something really does come over him, I'd be surprised if he got really as deep as he would hope.
Just one final result to mention from centre court. Kyle Edmund, straight sets defeat to Gael Monfils. There were some moments where he challenged, certainly in that first set, really fell away in the first set tiebreak. You feel like that's where the match was won and lost, really.
Yeah, I mean, he did okay. He didn't freeze,
And
I mean, that first set, you know, if he'd have won that, maybe it changes. He got himself a breakup as well in the third set, but We've seen him sort of fade in matches before, and he did fade at times in it. And it was quite interesting listening to a debate between Annabel Croft and the commentary team about whether they were asking her, should he be getting the crowd going more? Should he be fist pumping? Should he be using this centre court occasion?
Maybe he should, but it's not him.
It's not him.
It's like when people tried to get Tim Henman to do fist clenching, and he tried it a bit, and it felt and looked ridiculous.
I just feel you've got to let Kyle Edmund get on with it quietly, because he learns, he improves, and I mean I would like to see him walk with a bit more of a kind of presence out there, but that's very easy for me to say from the sidelines. I've never done this before. I think that would add something to him, but that is going to have to come with time.
But trying to be something he's not, I don't think will help him in the slightest. But yeah, I agree. Just one final.
Well played, Germán Feast, by the way.
Yeah,
I thought he
indeed.
Was really
who said
good
in
today.
His post-match interview with whoever was doing?
It was. Rishi, it was with Lee McKenzie.
Was it Lee McKenzie?
And he confirmed that he still doesn't really like grass.
Yeah, he said, sorry, I just don't like it.
So, nothing personal.
It's through to round three, though. Well done, Gail. Yeah. One final. We will look ahead to the order of play for tomorrow, but we'll just must spare a thought for Bethany Mattek-Sands, who...
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean,
whatever you do, don't watch the video, because it's immensely distressing.
You.
Do not watch the video. She was out on court against Sorana Castella, court number 17. I think she was approaching the net and her knee simply buckled at the net. She was in just enormous distress on the court. It was very clearly something very serious right from the moment it happened. The match was immediately suspended. A sort of mini ambulance came to the court. She was stretchered off. We understand she's in hospital. It is a serious injury. We don't know anything more than that.
No.
And we just wish her well. Incidentally, her doubles partner, Lucy Safarova, was straight down onto the court. She had to go out and play singles. Now, I've just heard her called to press. And I don't know how that match finished. And I will look that up, obviously, in a moment.
I think she lost the singles match, Lucy Safarova. And I know she was in tears after
to have to go and play singles match.
And they were on for, I think, weren't they on for holding all four Grand Slams?
They were. They're currently holders of all three. This is the only one they haven't won before.
It's just terrible.
It's
but
dreadful.
I mean, you know, all that aside, just the sheer... physical and human element of it that just we wish you just all the best for the quickest possible recovery.
Yeah, we do. She was assessed all with Saronica Stowe. It was a great match. She was a wild card here. She was potentially on her way to round three. It's just awful. And I know when you hear someone say, don't watch the video, all you want to do is go and watch it. But it really, it's distressing.
No, it's
really distressing. Just don't. And everybody here wishes her well. In terms of the order of play for tomorrow, David, all of our questions are answered.
Oh yeah.
My calls haven't been answered, but my questions have. Victoria Azarenka and Heather Watson kick things off on the centre court. They are the chosen women to play on centre court tomorrow. They'll be followed by Rafael Nadal and Karen Khachanov. And then finally, Andy Murray against Fabio Fognini. Well, court number one sees Steve Johnson against David Law's finalist, Marin Cilic, who would meet Rafael Nadal in the quarterfinals. Everybody keeps correcting us that I say you think he's going to beat Nadal in the semis. Of course, that would be a quarterfinal, and the winner would potentially play Murray in the semifinals.
Yeah, I've been getting that one wrong as well. I've been getting a bit confused. So apologies, everybody, on the tennis podcast.
The volume of players and results that we're covering, we're doing our very best. I don't have a photographic memory for the draw, and I apologise for that.
Work on that for next year.
They'll be followed by Joe Konta and Maria Sakkari.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Ari, and finally on court number one, Naomi Osaka and Venus Williams, which I love the look of.
Yeah, that could be a good match.
And court number two has Bednay and Muller. I think that could be the end of the road for Bednay, but he's got a chance.
He's certainly second favourite. I think it helps him a little that he played Ivo Karlovic early on, so he's used to a big serve. It comes at you in a different angle from Muller, who is younger, who is playing better, and I would favour Muller to win that one as well. But Bednay's probably playing as well as I've seen him play. So
yeah,
you never
agreed.
Know.
I'm so impressed with him. I'm really pleased for him. But I do just think it will be the end of the road tomorrow. Simona Halep, Peng Shuai, Yelena Ostapenko and Camilla Giorgi. Come on.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. It's great, isn't it?
That's like a WWF
it's great.
Tennis match, isn't it?
You know, incidentally, Camilla Giorgi beat Madison Keys last night. Finished really late, so we didn't have a chance to mention it. Great win. I'm so pleased to see her stringing some grass court form together. This is a woman that's banned from playing tennis on public courts in Italy, such as the extent of the fallout that she and her dad / coach have had with the Italian Federation.
Blimey. Crikey. I mean,
the way it's probably more her dad than her, but she is a firecracker.
The way they go about playing tennis, Giorgi and Ostapenko, I mean, it's like they must compare notes and say, I tell you what, I don't care if I'm 8 feet behind the baseline. I'm going for a winner.
Yeah, don't right? expect many rallies. Joe Wilfred Tsonga against Sam Querrey, who I've drawn in the Five Live sweepstake, David. And oh. I'm reluctant to hand over my £2.
Why? I mean, you know, Sam Querrey has beaten Djokovic last year.
I only found out about it yesterday after my women's pick, Petra Kvitova, had lost. And my men's pick is Sam Querrey. Well done, Sam.
Maybe
could beat Tsonga tomorrow. I just don't think he's going to win the title.
Maybe it's his year.
Disagree with me if you want, David. Is that what you're doing? No. Okay, elsewhere, Nishikori against Bautista Agut, Svitolina against Vitoft, and some doubles as well. Lots of doubles happening. Dominika Sibulkova against Anna Konyu.
Sweepstake, by the way, is luck-based, isn't it? That's not predictions. That's just us picking a name out of a hat.
No, I would like that to be made very clear.
Well, I thought I'd help you out there.
In any way predicted Sam Querrey to win Wimbledon this year. And I think that's it for women's and men's singles matches. Caroline Garcia against Madison Brengel, the conqueror of your pick, Petra Kvitova, which I'm not going to be remotely smug about anymore because everyone's picks seems to have gone.
We've not had the best day, have we? We finally got around to posting everybody's pick from the Kickstarter campaign. There's about 13 of us teams. Rosie, the dog, seems to be beating all of us just at the moment. But anyway...
she knows what she's talking about.
We finally got around to designing the grid that shows all of our choices. And by the time we've got around to it, basically,
all
of us looks like complete idiots.
It's very important in future that we publish them before the tournament starts so that we minimum stupid looking.
I know.
Just finally, David, we've been hoping that Simon Briggs would be able to join us, but he's a very, very busy man because he has news hot off the press.
If you don't know who Simon
Briggs
is. Possibly
quite literally hot off the press.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Simon Briggs, the Telegraph's tennis correspondent. He does try and join us during these daily podcasts, but he's an incredibly busy man, what with having a men's and a women's clear favourite for the title at this year's tournament.
That's right.
But, David, I understand you can bring us the hot off the press Telegraph.
Yeah, I can certainly bring you
in lieu of Simon himself
the gist of it, certainly, and it relates to the US Open of this year, which Simon tells me in an exclusive story that he's about to break in the Telegraph tonight on the
you're
website.
About to break.
Well, no, but it's
the
his story.
Tennis podcast is about to break.
It's his story, but he's given me sight of it, and the gist of it is that they're going to use a shot clock during the US Open qualies, I guess to test it out, which we know they're going to use several different rule changes for the next-gen championships in Milan at the end of the year, which is kind of the guinea pig for everything, isn't it? Try it all out, see what happens,
try
see what works. But this is a Grand Slam tournament which is stepping up, and we've seen this from the US Open before. They've done things like this before with the final set tiebreak in the fifth set.
Which you hate.
No, I don't. I really don't.
You won over.
I'm won over. I still think maybe it might be better to do it at 9-all or something. But generally speaking, I have been won over by that totally. I think there should be a tiebreak in the fifth
set. It's not just
at some
the
point.
Shot clock, though, is it?
It's not just the shot clock. They're also going to have some coaching options for the players.
On-court coaching options.
No, I don't believe it's on-court coaching.
Is it via this headset business?
I don't think it's that. I think it's just an ability to confer with your coach.
But how? If it's not on-court and if it's not via a headset?
Well, you know how they do...
Is it phone a friend?
You know how when you do signals
David's
and stuff
really,
and shout out...
Really right, annoyed with me tonight.
Stop talking. You know how when the coaches shout out stuff to their player and they get told... That's coaching. You're in trouble.
So you're just going to be allowed to shout?
Yeah, you can do signals and hold a banana up if you think they should be eating a banana.
But then your opponent will see it and hear it.
Well, that's fine, yeah. It's basically, they're just saying, look, we're not going to have all that nonsense of you can't even talk to your coach anymore. You can frankly do what you like.
That's interesting because what they're trialling at the Next Gen Finals, which is an ATP initiative, while this is specifically a US Open initiative, is on-court coaching via headset, which, as we've discussed, I think is a cop-out. I think that's them looking at the WTA Tour and going, on-court coaching is quite good, isn't it? But them not wanting to admit that the WTA have come up with a good idea, so they've gone, we're going to do something a bit different. We're going to do headset coaching, which is basically on-court coaching, but with the added help of a headset.
Isn't it just refining something you think is not a bad idea?
What about a headset makes it more refined? I think it makes it clumsier.
Well, we'll find out, won't we? I mean, I honestly don't know, but we'll find out. It might be a better idea. We'll see. But that's going to happen at the US Open.
It's going to happen thanks to the absent Simon Briggs for that story.
I think that's
That was a pretty good gist, David. If you want more than that, then check out the Telegraph tomorrow.
Yeah, because I may have got something wrong. have a look at the paper, have a look online at the Telegraph website, and you'll find out all about it. But yeah, remember when they had that interview on court during a match with Coco Vandeweghe?
I sure do. The US Open, yeah.
I asked ESPN about that, you know, and there was. They still want to do more of that, but they got quite a lot of pushback, I think, over that. But anyway.
Well, I mean, I'm all for things being trialled. I am. I think it's great. I like the idea that the Grand Slams have the autonomy and independence to make the decisions to do that themselves. They don't have to, because if it were all slams together that have to make a unanimous movement towards something, I mean, nothing would ever change, would it? I mean, just ever. I mean, things are slow moving in terms of change in sport and in tennis anyway. So from that perspective, it's pleasing. And, you know, you don't know unless you try. So good on them.
Yeah. And good on Simon Briggs for breaking the story.
Absolutely. We hope to have you on soon, Simon. I'm going to let David Lord go now because I think he's had quite enough of my company for today and perhaps the tournament. We have been
no,
the Tennis
right.
Podcast. It brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. And I hope, arguments permitting, we'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.